the Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you as we start our Labor Day weekend. The Tennessee Titans, 1 week from Sunday, will kick off in Denver against the Broncos. Hey, look at this. The line has moved. Denver is no longer 8-point favorites. They're 7.5-point favorites. Congratulations, Titans. You are still a touchdown underdog, but at least it is an 8 points, right?
I guess.
It appears that is still the biggest line of the week. Actually, and this is not a shocker after what happened yesterday, the Eagles are 7.5-point favorites against the Cowboys on Thursday Night Football to kick off the season. So the Cowboys and the Titans are the biggest underdogs of the week at 7.5 points.
So, what do you call, Adam, the thing that a lot of people do every year where you pick the sure winner and you have to survive?
The survivor pool, yeah.
So is it a codlock cinch that the Titans will be the most popular pick in the survivor pool for week one, the consensus?
Yeah, I would say so. I think there will be a lot of votes for the Cowboys after Micah Parsons got traded. And they open on the road at Philadelphia. So I do think the Cowboys will be a popular selection in survivor pools as well. But yes, I would agree. I think that the Broncos are going to be a popular selection.
And yet, in the NFL, there's probably one, conservatively one every other week. But I would say 13 of the 17 weeks, a game that has you in week one is no different. In fact, it probably is more likely in week one. A game that has you going, huh?
Right.
How did that happen?
Wasn't it Patriots over Bengals in week one
last
season? Yeah,
yes.
that's the
great
perfect
example.
That's the perfect example. One texter has already made his prediction for the game. My prediction for that game is that Bo Nix throws for two touchdowns early in the first, and then they run the ball the rest of the game, and R.J. Harvey and J.K. Dobbins total for 300 yards and two touchdowns. I think Calvin Ridley gets in the end zone, and the Titans don't score more than 7 points.
Okay, keep that text filed away, and then we'll read it next Monday, a week from Monday, and see if it lines up.
We shall see. But over the course of the week, and we will continue this next week as well, we will have to do two Titans questions, or perhaps we'll do two today if we come up with it. But each day this week, Willie has been presenting what he feels are pressing Titans questions as we look ahead to the start of the regular season. So, Willie, before we introduce question number 5, let's quickly recap questions 1 through 4 and our responses for each of them.
All right. Question 1. Over or under 42.5 sacks allowed for the Titans offensive line? You know that has been a source of big conversation the last couple years, and they have not done a good job protecting their quarterbacks. 42.5 would constitute about league average, a little worse than league average. We're getting a little margin here. All of us did not think they could go under 42.5. That would be an excellent number, because it would mark double-digit improvement over last year and way more improvement from 2 years ago. Yet we all think it'll be better, but still over that 42.5. Question 2, Cam Ward, over or under 12.5 games played? I said under. D. Mace and Adam said over. Adam said he's going to play all 17.
I did.
I go by the track record the last few years. The Titans have had trouble keeping their quarterback healthy. And so I just went the other way. I went under. Question 3, Calvin Ridley, very spicy debate, over or under 1,100 yards in his second season as a Titan. He had 1,017 last year, 1,017. All of us say over, although it's interesting. We think he's going to get a lot of targets. And he has had a lot of targets in his career, but he's only had 1 year where he has eclipsed 1,100, or he had the one big year, he had 1,300, but he's a guy that doesn't catch a high percentage of his targets, yet we're confident he's going to get 1,100 or more. Four, more combined yards, Group A, Jim DK, Alec Iomanner, Gunnar Helm, Bryce Oliver, or Group B, the incumbents, Tyler Lockett, Van Jefferson, Chika Conquo. So in other words, the question is, are the young upstart skill players going to have more production than the placeholders that are in front of them right now? D-Mace and Adam took the incumbents, the veterans, Lockett, Jefferson, and Chig. I took the youngsters, DK, Iomanner, Helm, and Oliver. But I think it's a key question on which direction the season goes for the Titans, both this year and going forward. And now we get to today. Availability is a skill. And to be effective in this league, you got to be out there. Two guys that fit this mold for the Titans that, if they're out there, could help some. Legarius Sneed and Tajay Spears. We know the tale of LJ, as Mike Borgonzi likes to call him. Legarius Sneed. It's been quite the interesting tenure since he became a Titan. Played only 5 games last year. Wasn't himself even when he was playing. Then had the mysterious injury that nobody saw and missed the rest of the season. Then the offseason goes on, and of course there were the issues there with the off-field incident. The grand jury hearing will be in mid to late September if it stays on time. Who knows what will happen with that? And then, of course, the league always has that wild card of, do they deem there was conduct unbecoming of a player? So there could be some supplementary discipline thrown out there at some point. But that being said, Sneed is off the PUP. He's practicing. And there seems to be a lot of optimism that he'll be in uniform for game one if he's not suspended. Then there's Tajay Spears, who played 12 games last year. So he was dealing with some different injuries. He still has yet to really back up any of the flash that he's shown with consistent production alongside of the veteran Tony Pollard. In a perfect world, Spears and Pollard would be the 1-2 punch to try to support Cam Ward. And Spears, we know now, has the high ankle sprain that has got him on IR. So the maximum he could play this year would be 13 games if he's ready to go when he's eligible to come off the IL, which is not a given. So all that said, the availability of these two players is in question. They played a combined 17 games last year. So we set the over-under this year at 17.5. Okay, Adam, over or under, Sneed and Spears combined, 17.5 games played.
I had a harder time answering this question than I thought I would because my gut was under. Because who the hell knows with Legarius Sneed? He appears he's going to be ready for week one, but that word appears is doing a lot of heavy lifting considering what we saw last season from Legarius Sneed. So my gut, when you first presented this question to me, was under. Not even a thought in my mind. But I think I'm going to go slightly over. Here's the caveat. I think Tajay Spears is going to be available once he misses his required 4 games. I'm not sure how effective he's going to be once he comes back because Willie, as you know and we have discussed, high ankle sprains, they tend to linger. This is not a run-of-the-mill ankle sprain. High ankle sprains, when you suffer one of those, even if you're back on the playing field, you can still feel it, right? So Tajay Spears could play 13 games. I don't know how effective he's going to be in those 13 games, but he could be on the field for those 13 games. So after thinking it through, I am going to take the over. I think it's going to be a slight over. I anticipate both of them will play enough to overtake the 17.5. What this answer does not take into account is how good will they be when they're on the field? Because that's not what you're asking. That's not what you're asking.
But I have today a little nuance to our question.
Okay, let me hear it.
We have part B.
Oh.
We have. So I'm like that professor that
this
hit you
with.
This is
new to me.
A two-part question. And that is, part B is if you had to buy stock in one or the other.
Oh, man.
And I, albeit, will say that both stocks are pretty low right now. Who would you buy stock in for production this year? And I realize it's hard. It's a little subjective comparing a corner to a running back, right? We could look at the stats for the running back and say he's got this many yards, et cetera. But who would you rather back with some stock, Snead or Spears? Because that's the second part of the question. Who's going to have a better year?
Oh, man. That is a tough question because you're right. It's apples and oranges, right? Comparing the productivity of a defensive back.
And let me tell the listeners, because I want the listeners in on this. 615-737-1025. I want you to answer this question over or under 17 and a half games combined, but also who would you buy stock in for a better season this year? And you cannot cop out with a, I wouldn't buy stock in either one of those guys. I need you to pick one because I know there were a lot of people that would. And look, if you want to give a sarcastic, fun answer as to why you wouldn't buy stock, have at it on the text line. We want fun on this show, right? But I am really curious, right? Can they get anything out of either one of these guys, right? This is a huge question for this roster. They desperately need something to go right. For the last couple of years, nothing has gone right for the franchise in general, but especially with Snead, who they backed up the Brinks truck a boatload of money to, and he hasn't given them return on the investment at all, and it looks pretty tenuous. But he is ready to go. Like, we were very skeptical 4 weeks ago that he would be ready for week one. Now it looks like there's a chance, a pretty good chance, that he suits up in the first game.
That is a tough question to answer. A lot more is riding on L'Jarius Snead than Tajay Spears. Because if Tajay Spears isn't ready, you still have Tony Pollard, assuming Tony Pollard stays healthy, and Julius Chestnut, and maybe they find another running back off of the scrap heap somewhere. But if Snead is unavailable, we know the status, the quality of the other cornerbacks for the Tennessee Titans. So a lot more is riding on Snead than Spears. If I had to buy stock in one of them, it is tough. My gut leans towards Tajay Spears because at least we saw some production from Spears last season. And even a hobbled Spears, assuming he comes back from the high ankle sprain and there are some lasting effects, I still think you can squeeze something out of him. I was just so, what's the word I'm looking for here? I can't think of another one, so I'll just say it. Disappointed by what happened with L'Jarius Snead last season. I'm just unconvinced that we will ever see the Super Bowl winning L'Jarius Snead in Tennessee. So I'm not really optimistic about either of them, but I will lean Spears.
Okay. The reason I throw Spears in there as an important guy, he's another symbol of another draft that it's teetering on being a complete bust. And Spears, in my mind, he has shown glimpses and flashes of, okay, this guy can make some plays, but it hasn't translated to stats that you can really lean on, right? You can circle plays or show a tape of a play or two where you're like, wow. And it's not a play or two. It's they sprinkle in there. You're like, wow, he's got something here. He can make guys miss, and he's pretty strong for his size. He can move the pile sometimes. You can get him out in space and things can happen, but it just hasn't translated. And then, of course, on top of that, staying healthy stuff. And then the high ankle sprain, his style of play, you would think the high ankle sprain would affect him more than a lot of other players because he needs to be shifty. He needs to be able to make people miss. And so they need a hit their draft reputation. Of course, Borgonzi's sitting there going, I didn't make the move for either one of these guys. But others, you know, you need players. This is a dearth of talent. You need somebody to step up. So how am I going to answer this question? I am going under the 17.5. I think there are guys who are just not quite cut out to be NFL players when it comes to their body. Like, if you give them a magic wand and you could be healthy, and I'm talking about Spears, then I think he would be productive. It's not a lack of talent, but I just don't think his body will hold up. Although he did play 17 games his rookie year. That should not be overlooked. And then Snead, I'll just believe it when I see it. I can't fathom him playing more than about half the games. So with a maximum of 13 for Spears, and then you got to have about half of the games, or you know, you got to have 5 or 6 games, give or take, you know, from Snead. I just think there's a chance something goes horribly wrong with one of them, and so that would get you under. So I'm going to go under.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Willie, recap for the listeners, question number 5, because it's 2 parts, so keep that in mind.
Part A, Legarius Sneed and Tajay Spears. A lot of skepticism about their availability. We know Spears is out at least 4 games. Will they combine to play 17, over or under 17.5 games? Over, under 17.5 combined. And then if you have to pick one or the other to buy stock in, who will be more productive this year, Sneed or Spears?
615-737-1025. We will get to your reaction. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan here with you. The season debut of Take It to the Bank coming up in the final segment. It's for real now. The points count now. And that is coming up in about 20 minutes. But before we get there, Willie, let's recap question number 5 of your pressing Titans questions. We will get to your reaction, 615-737-1025.
Okay, I want to hear from you. 615-737-1025, do you have faith? Or are you a big-time skeptic in the availability of 2 players on the Titans, Legarius Sneed and Tajay Spears? Will they combine to play basically over half the games? Over, under 17.5 games combined, will they be out there? We know Spears is going to miss the first 4 games minimum. Sneed, if we had asked this question 3 weeks ago, everybody would have said under, hands down. But he's starting to practice. They're very optimistic that he will be out there at the beginning of the season. That's got to count for something. And then if you had to back a horse, Sneed or Spears, which player would you buy stock in first, Sneed or Spears, to have a better season?
Ricky answers the first question. He's taking the over, saying Legarius Sneed will play 15 games and Tajay Spears will play 7.
15 games.
15 games for Sneed, 7 for Spears.
Well, that would put you at the over, but that's getting the over even with only 7 games for Spears. So I'm curious why he thinks that Sneed will be able to play that many. I'm very skeptical of that. I'm very skeptical of that. But you never know. This is why you ask these questions, because we revisit these every 4 weeks, and we know if they go a certain way, we can look really silly for even asking the question when we did. But we know this has been a big topic all summer long.
I know that there is a lot riding on the availability of Legarius Sneed because of the state of the Titans' cornerback depth. But don't discount the importance of Tajay Spears' availability as well. The Titans made a point in the offseason to talk about how they were hoping for a balanced rushing attack with Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears. Tony Pollard had some of the highest rushing yards after contact numbers in the NFL last season because he was being contacted behind the line of scrimmage so damn much. And I do think it took an effect over the course of the season. So it would be nice for the Titans to have a second back they could rely on. I also think that would be better for Tony Pollard because, remember, Tony Pollard became a bona fide NFL player by being that change of pace back for Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas, and his best 2 yards per carry seasons of his career were during those couple of seasons in Dallas before he left and joined the Tennessee Titans. So I do actually think you get a better Tony Pollard if you limit the number of times he touches the ball. But with Tajay Spears out of the lineup for at least the first 4 weeks, I am curious, Willie, about how the distribution of carries is going to go. We assume it will be Julius Chestnut taking the backup role. So I think that Tajay Spears' absence could play a bigger role over the course of the season with Tony Pollard.
I completely agree. Tony Pollard, no doubt, is at his best when he doesn't have to be the workhorse. And Tajay Spears, and maybe they were wrong to count on him, but as we've said, they have too many holes to fill in one offseason. In a perfect world, you might want an upgrade there, but he's got a great opportunity. That's why it was so disappointing about him having the setback he did in the first preseason game, because I do see a difference between Spears and Chestnut. Maybe Chestnut gives you a little bit more than you think he will at this point. He's completely unproven. But, I think the tandem is everything, and Brian Callahan has not really seen that work, especially with what you would hope is a better offensive line.
Chris on our text line says, to use the words of Sweet Lou Piniella, do you think Snead is jaking it? Is that the word? He's earned his payday, however. Now he is not earning his paycheck. Chris in the borough.
He's referring to Snead?
Yes.
Well, if he, how would you answer that if he's in there in week one?
I've never been of the mind that Legarius Need is just phoning it in now because he got paid. I'm sure it happens in sports. It's an easy thing to say when a player gets paid and then struggles. Oh, he doesn't care anymore because he got paid. I mean, I think most of the time it's just something for upset fans to latch onto. But I don't necessarily believe that.
I don't either, because I don't see how you can even say that if he's in there in week one. I think people were suspicious of that for a while, and I thought that was unfair to assume that. I never don't give the player the benefit of the doubt unless there's something really strong, right? I think that narrative was floated by somebody. I shouldn't say just one person, but there were the ringleaders in that narrative, and I'll leave it at that. I never bought into that. And so if he's in there week one, how would you answer that question? Because it's not for me to answer, because I never doubted that. I usually don't doubt a professional athlete will want to play until he cannot play anymore.
The one play that comes to mind for those who believe that athletes who get paid just stopped caring is that one play when Albert Haynesworth was in Washington when he fell on the ground and just laid there. I'm like, okay, that typifies maybe what you're talking about. But
there are exceptions, right?
Yes.
But by and large, 99% of the best athletes in the world want to play until you have to drag them off the field.
Joey from Bellevue says, I think under. Both are unreliable. Spears is Burks 2.0. However, I would buy stock in Snead. It's a toss-up, but I'll roll with Snead. Viking Matt says he is going under 15 combined for both players.
Under 15, okay. I knew we would get some bites on the under because of the fatalism and right now the lack of confidence in the organization as a whole. And so until they experience some success, I think you're going to be more apt to have the glass half empty, especially on a question like this, where you just haven't seen these guys prove that they can stay out there.
We need to recalibrate our expectations for Legarius Sneed. I know he's making the same money that he was making last season, but the fact that he was unavailable for most of the season, excuse me, and he's dealing with the chronic knee injury. Let me ask you this question, Willie. What would you consider a successful season for L'Jarius Sneed? It can be games played. It can be statistics. It can be however you want to define it. If by the end of the season, if L'Jarius Sneed does X, Y, Z, for you, what would constitute a successful season?
For me, if he plays and gives them league average cornerback play for 14 to 17 games, to me, that's a success because that's a pretty good rebound. And so, as you notice, I'm not expecting elite cornerback play from him. I think that's a little too much to ask. So I just hope he's on the field and can be steady, better than what they would have otherwise. And remember, they did go pick up some corners, right? They grabbed a couple off the waiver wire. They're kind of trying to float numbers at you and hope that they're okay. But if he could just give you somebody that, you know, the other team is saying, well, you know, they got Sneed over there. I'm not sure. You know, and they're not picking on that person, right? As opposed to he's not there and whoever's out there is like, yep, we can go work that guy. That would be a success as a bounce back. So that's not the highest bar, but it's a bar.
Steven says, though, these two Band-Aid brand ambassadors will not give you more than a dozen games combined this season. A dozen.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be concerned that if one of them all of a sudden is out, it just takes one play. You know, with their history, that's what it seems like it's happened before. It's not implausible.
Viking Matt chimes back in to specify that Sneed will play six games. He said that he is going under 15 for the two combined. Sneed will play six. So I assume that means L'Jarius Sneed will play, Tajay Spears will play no more than eight.
Okay. Remember, yeah. Spears has a maximum of 13.
Yes. Here's what my prediction is. I think Tajay Spears comes back as soon as he can. So he is unavailable until at least week five. He has to miss the first four games of the season. I say Spears comes back in week five and plays most of the rest of the season, maybe misses a game here or there. So out of a maximum of 13, I'm thinking he'll play 10. I think that's my number for Spears is 10. He'll miss the first four games. He'll miss three others over the course of the season. He'll suit up for 10. Now, who knows how productive he'll be in those 10 games, but I will say that Spears dresses for 10 of 17 games.
Okay. I think that's reasonable. Would you take that? I'd be, you know, you would be thrilled.
The litany of injuries that he suffered last season, there was a couple of concussions, right, and a regular ankle sprain, and I think there was a hamstring injury as well. It's like the board game operation out there. I would take 10. I would take double digits. Okay. If he can get to 10, I will take it. So he misses the first four and then misses three others scattered around the rest of the season.
Okay, do you factor anything in? We want to hear more responses. 615-737-1025. If I throw this in there, because this is a fact, Tajay Spears did play all 17 games 2 years ago. L'Jarius Sneed, in the 3 years leading up to last year, played 15, 17, and 16. So it's not like this is a chronic thing, right? But what we know is he had a strange injury last year, which is kind of like, well, what's the track record of recovery for that? We don't really have one. And he had knee issues coming in that we were hearing about that they were managing. He didn't practice. We know all that. But the guy was out there. Right. And he did have a procedure on a knee that was the reason he was on the PUP. So with all of that, let's not forget that he did go 15, 17, 16 for three straight years. Does that change your thought at all?
That's a good question. I gave L'Jarius Sneed the benefit of the doubt last season when all of this stuff was happening because he was available for basically every game with the Kansas City Chiefs. So I feel like it would be hypocritical of me not to give him the benefit of the doubt again. but just the mysterious nature of that injury last season and how vague the Titans were and how vague Snead was, I don't think there was anything conspiratorial going on, but there were enough question marks to make me skeptical. So although I understand and I defended Snead last season by pointing out the fact that he was available almost every game in Kansas City, I just think the weird nature of everything last season has left me feeling skeptical about the whole thing.
Right. And so on top of the 15, 17, and 16 games he played in his last 3 years in Kansas City, he also played 10 additional playoff games. So he had shown he could go through the rigors and be available at a really high level. I think the thing that is in the back of my mind, besides the recency, right, and besides that notion right now of anything that can go wrong for the Titans is likely to go wrong because it's been going wrong. You have to fight through that to try to be positive about it, is just a player's knee, right? If there are issues medically with players' knees, they don't tend to get better as the player gets older. They're more likely to crop up again. And so with Spears and with Snead, that's the specific thing I think that creates the most skepticism in my mind, which is why I have gone under. It's not because I think they're not trying, right? That's zero of my thinking. It's just that sometimes medically, your body just can't take the rigors and you can't be the player that you want to be.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on this. But coming up next, the season debut of Take It to the Bank. We'll make our selections. We'll also welcome in Connor Newt to give us a preview of the high school football action around the mid-state tonight. That's coming up next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan. Almost said Derek Mason. Derek's not here today. David Janes as well. It is time to take it to the bank with our friends at F&M Bank. Less worry, more living. F&M Bank, banking made easy on purpose. So, if this is your first time hearing Take It to the Bank, now it gets real again. For the past several months, we've been just having fun with it. But now the points count. So, David Janes is in charge of the point system. Mm-hmm. It's completely subjective. So David Janes determines how many points you get for each pick based on the degree of difficulty. Again, completely subjective. It's up to David. We've closed all of the loopholes that Derek Mason tried to wiggle through last season where he would make like three picks within each pick. That's not happening anymore. We each get four selections. I think starting next week, what we're going to do is we're going to take a page out of the Pigskin Pick'em book from Robbie and Rex Road and make two picks, two common picks, and then two individual picks. But for this week, we're doing all individual picks. Willie, we'll start with you. Derek did get his picks into David Janes, even though he's not here today. So David will share his own picks as well as Derek's. But Willie, why don't you go first?
All right. I'm going to take Ohio State -1.5 against Texas. I'll take the Buckeyes. I will take Tennessee to cover in their game against Syracuse. I've got -13.5 for Tennessee. I think they'll get off to a good start. I'm buying into what Mitch laid out for Syracuse. Just too many question marks, too many different players. We know it could go either way, but I feel like Tennessee will be up to the task. I'm going also... I'm not going to shy away from the big games. So I'm going to take LSU to win. But I won't flat out go for too much because I am skeptical of David's degree of difficulty system. So I'm just going to play it straight, give myself every opportunity to win. And I'm going to go LSU +4.5 against Clemson. And then finally, a little personal note, a local tie, friend of the Donick family, London Humphreys out of CPA, wide receiver for Georgia, touchdown against the Thundering Herd of Marshall for number 5 Georgia on Saturday.
Okay, here are my four selections. I, too, will take LSU to upset Clemson on the road. Clemson is favored by 4.5. I will say LSU will win by a field goal. So LSU will upset Clemson by a field goal on the road.
What do you get if they win by a field goal? Are you looking for extra bonus points? See, these are the gray rules of this context.
That's all up to David James.
That I always complain about. You have to try to read the mind of the commissioner, which I cannot do. I did not do successfully last year.
That's your fault. All right, that's your fault. You could have slipped me a few dollar bills.
It to the bank after all.
I am a fair judge, but I can be bought.
Okay, so my first selection is that LSU will upset Clemson, the Tigers, the LSU Tigers. That is, they will win by a field goal. My second selection. Alabama, 13.5-point favorites on the road at Florida State, will cover against the Seminoles. So I have Alabama just kicking the crap out of Florida State in Tallahassee. Vanderbilt and Charleston Southern tomorrow. Diego Pavia will record at least 3 combined touchdowns versus Charleston Southern. So any combination, 3 passing, 0 rushing, 2 passing, 1 rushing, etc. Diego Pavia will record at least 3 combined touchdowns versus Charleston Southern. And my final selection, by the time we are back next Friday, there will have been an NFL game, a regular season game, Cowboys at Eagles next Thursday to open the season. After what happened yesterday, Philadelphia, which is favored by 7.5, will win by double digits against the Cowboys. Those are my 4 picks. David, why don't you do...
Okay, so are you locked into that number? Because it could change. That line could change between now and next Thursday.
Yes, So Philadelphia is 7.5-point favorites at home against the Cowboys. I say the Eagles will win by at least 10 points. So David James, why don't you read yours, and then you can read Derek's.
All right, so I went to the Alabama versus Florida game, Florida State game, and... I agree. I think it's going to be... I don't agree. I think Florida State is going to pull off the upsets of the weekend. I'm going big or go home, That's what Take It to the Bank has to be. You got to go big or go home,
I hear you.
So I think Florida State's going to win against Alabama. I like... What was it? I was trying to find out. This is how unprepared I am. Lenora Sellers, I think Lenora Sellers, he is one of my Heisman favorites. I think he's just really, really good. I'm going to go with 2 touchdowns against Virginia Tech. And it'll be 2 rushing touchdowns by Lenora Sellers against Virginia Tech. I'm also going to pick the U against Miami. Go Canes. I was trying to remember their name. Playing Notre Dame. Yep. Go Canes. And I will also, screw it. I was not wanting to do this, but I am. Nick Vadiato, he's going for 3 touchdowns this weekend. Go Blue Raiders, baby.
Okay. All right.
David, the commissioner with the go big or go home attitude.
Exactly.
Let the record show you did go home last year.
I did. Also, I want to make the record know that I came in a couple weeks into the season as well.
That is true.
Later in the season. So I was already down for the record book.
But what happened last season is I started off incredibly well because I kept betting every week that Will Levis was going to have a turnover, and that worked like a charm. And then over time, I stopped winning as much, and Derek was able to catch me.
That was fair, yeah. So Derek's... and Derek has pretty good picks here. He said Nico will throw a touchdown and rush 4-1. So Nico for the UCLA Bruins will throw for a touchdown and rush for
one
touchdown.
That could help me in silly underdog picks since I took UCLA to upset Utah
The
weekend.
Yeah, it could help you out a lot. And so he also said Manning will throw, this is crazy, for over 225 and a passing touchdown.
Okay.
So he is big on the Manning train.
Texas
the Manning
versus
train.
Ohio State.
He also said Nick Marsh will have over 100 yards receiving and that Diego Pavia will throw for 2 touchdowns.
We'll see. Now, here's where the degree of difficulty comes in, Willie. Derek is predicting 2 passing touchdowns for Diego Pavia. I am predicting 3 touchdowns of any kind for Diego Pavia. So that's where the degree of difficulty comes in. So let's say Diego Pavia has one passing touchdown and two rushing touchdowns. Is that a more of a degree of difficulty for me, or is it for Derek?
If he I cannot read the mind of the commissioner. I did not read the mind of the commissioner very well last year, and that's what I am using as my excuse as to why I finished third.
The mind of the commissioner is that like meme of the monkey with the bells, you know, just doing this. That's my mind right now.
Yes. All right. Well, just in a matter of moments, Connor Newt and Parker Kelly will bring you Game Blitz. Connor Newt joins us in studio now.
Hi there.
Hello, Connor. Give us a rundown of what to expect tonight in high school football across the mid-state.
Well, there's a lot of big games tonight. Father Ryan is playing Riverdale, which will be a big one. Two teams coming off of a win.
Love that show.
Yeah, Riverdale. Yeah, with Archie. Paige and Green Hill. Number 6 Paige versus number 14 Green Hill. Big game in the mid-state tonight. Got some other ones as well. My JP2 Knights are off in East Robertson. Of course, Pearl Cone and CPA are doing battle tonight. Two teams that came away with losses last week, and they are going to do battle to get in the win column. CPA, I think, one of the best, if not the best, teams in the entire mid-state. So that's certainly one to keep an eye on. Lots of other games. There is over 91 games across the mid-state tonight.
That's and a lot.
We will have every single score, every single final on these airwaves starting as soon as our public schools game of the week is over.
Now, Connor, Willie has an important question for you about high school football. Willie, I know you asked me this earlier. I have no idea what the answer is. The expert is here, Connor Newt, so why don't you ask him?
Well, Connor, I just want maybe for people that are, you know, looking from a macro, right? Everybody's following their team.
Yeah.
But if you had to guess right now, if you had to pronounce Connor Newt's three best teams in the mid-state, regardless of classification, how would you rank them right now?
Oh, Willie, why are you doing this to me? well, I think
I want conversation. I want to create talk.
Well, Willie, I think number one has to be Oakland. Oakland is the defending state champions in their region. I think they are top tier in terms of talent. They have a dynamic quarterback, and they bring in some transfer talent from Joel Wyatt, who is a two-way player. He played in Bell Buckle last year, which unfortunately no longer has a football program, but glad to see him over down I-24 playing in Rutherford County. These are in no particular order, by the way. I think I just mentioned CPA would probably be on that list too. If you look at CPA's schedule, their win-loss record, I don't think will be indicative of how good of a team they are. They play an absolutely brutal schedule. They played Oakland last week. Obviously, they're up against Pearl Cone this week. They play a ton of other teams. I'd have to have the schedule in front of me to tell you those teams, but they play a loaded schedule. And I think, Willie, you can go and tell George Plaster I said this. I think BGA would have to be my third team. They have a lot of great talent. Caden Marable is their quarterback. He's 6'2", 170, which is a good frame for a quarterback. But he's one of the top quarterbacks in the state, not just the mid-state, the state. They have some great talent at the wide receiver position, and they're a young team. They're all sophomores and juniors. So they're not going anywhere anytime soon. So you can tell George I said I support his BGA team, and I think they are going to make some noise this season.
I'm sure the director will appreciate that very, very much.
That's the goal. I'm trying to get in the good graces of George Plaster.
That's not a bad move.
Well, Connor, we look forward to all of the coverage of high school football starting right after our program ends in just a matter of seconds. We hope you had a wonderful week. We sure did. We hope you have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Enjoy all of the college football because, boy, there are some excellent games this weekend. We will break it all down. We will also look ahead. It is game week when we return to these airwaves Tuesday at 3 p.m. Titans at Broncos. We will start breaking down that matchup because we are just a week or so away from actual football being played, NFL football, that is. So looking forward to that on behalf of Willie and Derek, who always says this to end every show. Be loved, love on your people, have a wonderful and safe Labor Day weekend. We will talk to you Tuesday, 3 p.m. Peace.